The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's the Gary Knoll Show, and now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and streaming video live at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. Today, we have information-packed hour, the latest on health and healing. You got a common cold? I'm going to share information today about how you can overcome that. And also the latest on vaccines, keeping you aware of what's going on with real science when it comes to are vaccines safe and are they effective. My guest in the second part of our program today is Matteo Bistone. Now, you haven't heard of him. He's an American Buddhist, a scholar, political activist, and for the past decade, Matteo has entered some of the more remote regions of Tibet, evading Chinese security to bring out photos of prisons, secret documents, smuggled interviews of torture victims, and acts of human rights abuse. He has become one of the major sources of information for the Dalai Lama and the State Department and others and congressional leaders, while all the while keeping his identity concealed. We're going to talk with him in an exclusive interview. A commentary on The Shame of Being an American by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. They're his views, and some of this that's very important. I think it gives us perspective. So we have a lot to share with you. Let's begin. Cold season, you bet. What do we do about it? Well, a team of scientists, including the researchers on zinc, found that zinc will indeed reduce the duration and severity of illnesses caused by the common cold. The findings are based upon 15 separate studies, and the idea that zinc might be effective against the common cold came from a study carried out which showed that zinc lozenges can reduce long-term symptoms. And these were all published by the Cochrane Systematic Review, which is an independent group of scientists from around the world that look at an issue. So, my suggestion, 15 to 30 milligrams of zinc, and if you have yourself any sore throat, congestion in the head, or lungs, take some zinc lozenges about every 2 hours. A French study has found that men who start to lose their hair at the age of 20 are more likely to develop prostate cancer later in life. They looked at a number of men, 388, being treated for prostate cancer with a matched control of healthy men, and this is what they found. And the study found that there was a connection, and this was published in the Annals of Oncology. My suggestion would be that men who begin to lose their hair go on a detoxification diet, especially rich in chlorophyll. The more juices you consume, the better it is. Now, I have been consuming an enormous amount of juice or powders and juice. Because of my travels, I simply cannot find in much of where I travel a restaurant. There are no health food restaurants. In fact, there are frequently no health food stores. So I take most of what I have with me. But throughout the day, the more chlorophyll I consume, the more energy I have, because chlorophyll and the superoxide dismutase in the greens are a major source of energy. Plus, I supplement with NADH and coenzyme Q10 and D-ribose and some other nutrients that help enhance mitochondrial function. But what I've noticed is how thick my hair has become. It's the thickest it's ever been. I have a photo from when I was 21. My hair was very long, and it's getting to that level of thickness and shininess. And even in places where I've just been measuring, and to my surprise, if you go back and look at some of the videos from 7 weeks ago when I was last in my studio, and I had, right in the front of my head here, I had it cut clear down, almost to a crew cut. And I just measured it yesterday, and it was almost 2.5 inches long just right there. That's a lot of growth. That's more than an inch per month. But it's thicker. So that's chlorophyll. That's phytonutrients. So what would help the hair also helps the prostate. So to have healthier prostate and healthier hair together, chlorophyll, no animal proteins, no caffeine, a high alkaline diet. Therefore, you are strengthening the prostate, you're detoxifying the prostate, you're turning off cytokines and free radicals in the prostate, you're repairing damaged DNA in the prostate. Therefore, there's no reason to have prostate cancer. Garlic helps protect against hip osteoporosis. Now, this is osteoarthritis, excuse me. This is a new article published in the British Medical Musculoskeletal Disorder Journal. And here's what it says. Quote, women who consume a diet high in allium vegetables such as garlic, onions, and leeks have lower levels of hip osteoarthritis. This was done at King's College in London and the University of East Anglia. And it highlights the benefit of having these sulfur compounds. Well, it's really the sulfur that makes a difference. And that's why N-acetylcysteine and alpha-lipoic acid are also good. So the more garlic, the more onions, the less osteoarthritis. They also turn off inflammation. Obesity causes cancer. This is an interesting study. And this is the first of this type I've seen. And here's what it says. This was done by a professor of clinical oncology at the All Indian Institute of Medical Sciences. It says, body fat, known to trigger problems related to diabetes and cardiovascular disease, is also a potential cause of different types of cancer. Quote, excess body fat leads to a body high mass index, which means the percentage of fat in proportion to weight and height of a person, which increases the risk of colon cancer by 55%. And this was the director of the Institute of Minimal Access, Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery at the Primus Super Specialty Hospital. Quote, women with high fat are susceptible to developing uterus and breast cancer by over 50%, unquote. Now, you've heard me mention many times that it's not possible to be overweight and healthy. That doesn't mean that we should be unhappy because we're overweight. It means that we have to be honest. It was interesting because just before coming into the studio upstairs in my office, I met with the editor of my book, my newest book, which is about life, and I wrote it for young people, people in their teens, 20s, 30s. And it's got a really funny title. And as he is the editor, I want to make sure that he's editing it in alignment with my philosophy. And I told him one of our biggest problems in our society, especially among our younger generation, were the parents' inability to tell the truth about life. And how when you don't tell the truth about life, when you want to shield your son or daughter from the ugliness of many of the pieces of our lives, then all you do is give them a false impression. And I believe it's important to be able to show, as historically was done, the reality of life. And that's why I said in my opening chapter that the revolution will have to start without us, meaning young people will not show up for any revolution. Excuse me. This is not like Egypt or Tunisia. You're not going to have young people showing up, because the young people in Tunisia and Egypt showed up because they were hungry. They were educated and had no jobs. And they couldn't compete against the fixed, locked-in oligarchical states, the rich, the powerful. So their poor is different than our poor. Their hungry is different than our hungry. And they have not distracted themselves in the same way. Their priorities are different. As a result, we won't be going to the streets. Not in the near future. And it's because we have not been shown the truth of all the pieces of life. Everything is about us. How do you feel, honey? Oh, you're just precious. You're beautiful. You're perfect. Just show up. Everyone's going to love you. And we don't connect that with anyone else. It's important we do. I saw a video that someone sent me today on the Ask Gary segment. I had a chance to finally open that up and, oh, whoa, 38,000 questions. So I got through about 300 I was going through. I'll get through them all in time. And one was a video sent to me, and it showed a million children, I think in India, but I could be wrong. Could have been Thailand, singing a song about living a life based upon love and kindness. It's very, I put it up on my Facebook, and I put it up on Progressive Radio Network. Very inspirational, just to hear the lyrics and see all the children. We don't have that in our society. And we should. It's important just to be honest about the problems and the solutions. It's like Fred Astaire. We'd like to think that on American Idol tomorrow you're going to see the next Fred Astaire. It's not going to happen. Fred Astaire is like Gandhi, like Martin Luther King. They only come once. That's it. Appreciate them when they're here. Remember them when they're not. We have gotten to this concept that everything is the same. It is not. We are not all the same. We are unique. It's what we share in common that allows us to have strength to go forward. Anyhow, more on that when the book comes out. Boosting the body's immune response may hold the key to HIV cure. This is from Medical News. Quote, Australian scientists have successfully cleared an HIV-like infection from mice by boosting the function of the cells vital to immune response. The team led by a Dr. Pellegrini from the Walter and Elisa Hall Institute showed that a cell-signaling hormone called interleukin-7 reinvigorates the immune response to chronic viral infection, allowing the host to completely clear virus. Their findings were released in the journal Cell. I can remember being in Linus Pauling's Institute, and a Dr. Jirwala showed me where he had completely killed all of the HIV culture he was working with using nothing more than quercetin. I had been using quercetin, but at about 10 times the dosage they were suggesting. I was using vitamin C at 200,000 milligrams a day in people who had full-blown AIDS, along with other things, and we completely cleared all other viruses. They just didn't have AIDS-defining illnesses. They had hepatitis, syphilis, herpes, herpes 6, which is really a killer, and cytomegalovirus, Coxsackie virus. They had everything, and mycoplasmas. All of that cleared. Interesting that now, 25 years later, they cleared the viruses in one culture of one cell line in one strain of mice, and that's Medical News. Why don't you go up on YouTube and watch all of the people who appeared on Tony Brown's journal on PBS who were near death, and about 16 months later, using the protocols, and I work with him, we're totally healthy. That shows you the difference between being in the media and being the elite media, and being in science and being the elite science, because we only pay attention to those that are considered the elite. That's unfortunate. And finally, vegans' elevated heart risk requires omega-3 and B12, study shows Science Daily from the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. Quote, people who follow a vegan lifestyle, strict vegetarians who try to eat no meat or animal products of any kind, may increase their risk of developing blood clots and atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries, which are conditions that can lead to heart attacks and stroke. their conclusions of a review of dozens of articles published in the Biochemistry and Vegetarianism during the last 30 years. Yes and no. Any healthy vegan is surely supplementing with B12 and is taking various forms of the omega-3 fatty acids on a daily basis. Yes, you can be an unhealthy vegan, and I've seen many, and you can be a vitally healthy vegan, and there are many more. So it depends upon who you're testing. But if you are a vegan, you definitely need to be taking the nuts, walnuts, and flaxseed, hemp seed oils, and you'll get your omega-3 fatty acids and B12 supplementing 500 to 1,000 micrograms a day. You'll get your B12. And finally, nitrate improves mitochondrial function. This is the third such article. This is from Cell Metabolism. And it says, quote, "The spinach-eating cartoon character Popeye has much to teach us. New research from the Swedish Medical University Karolinska Institute shows the muscle cellular power plants, the mitochondria, are boosted by nitrate, a substance found in abundance in dark green vegetables." It reminds me of all the marathons, dozens, that we have done, including a lot of firsts. The Natural Living Running and Walking Club members, let's go back, Sam Skinner. You and I both won gold medals in the Jamaica Marathon, the first. It was the most difficult, challenging marathon I've ever run. Remember, they didn't have water tables after the first 4 miles. They had us run up the steepest point in Jamaica because they thought it would be nice to see the view of Montego Bay. And that's the last thing you want to do when it's 100% humidity and 100 degrees is run up a mountain. There was torrential rain, and we were running in water that was 3 feet up with garbage and rats coming around us. They didn't stop the traffic, so people thought that somehow this was a bumper car derby and tried to hit us. Man, I've gotten 10 fights when people came run up by me. And like, if I didn't get out of the way and jump out of the way, I'd have gotten hit. And but there you are. If you go up on my Facebook page and go under, or just go on my website and go under photographs, under athletics and races, you'll see a picture. And the white on my legs, that's salt from my body. I was so dehydrated. But there, Sam Skinner and I, we both won gold in the Jamaica Marathon. And then the Los Angeles Marathon brought home the gold. I won the gold in the Los Angeles Marathon. And we also, the first London Marathon, Montreal Marathon, San Francisco Marathon, Marine Corps Marathon. Wonderful experiences. But they all had something in common. All throughout the race, where others were taking cola and Jolt and caffeine, we were taking green juices, and about every other mile, we'd throw down a mouthful of chlorophyll. Gee whiz, the chlorophyll increased nitrate, and that increased the energy at the mitochondria. Now we know why we felt so good and had so much energy. I'm Gary Knoll, a lot more to share with you, including a wonderful guest who's going to share things you've never heard before. An American who smuggled himself into the Tibetan areas to see about human rights violations. And we're going to talk with Mateo Vistona in a little bit from Colorado. Please stay with us. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good, I got you. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. We have so many young people listening in. I thank you. And remember, this is all word of mouth. There's no advertising. But what is interesting is since the Huffington Post sold out and sold its soul for $13 million to Arianna Huffington and $300 million to her company. Where then do progressives go? Well, I would challenge that they have been progressive in any case, but a lot of people who want to see progressive information, if you go to the Progressive Radio Network, you will see it because we are posting articles all day long and through the night from progressives all over the world and videos and information. So you can go there, and it's there. It's free. It's non-commercial for you. A couple things on vaccines to keep you up to date. This is from Rosemary Mathias. Quote, according to the National Vaccine Information Center, MedAlert's blog entry written recently, the incidence of abortion and stillbirth events from the HPV4 vaccine Gardasil supersedes the same event from all other vaccinations. The research and posts were written by Steve Rubin, PhD, a scientist who maintains the online search VARS database. Quote, the VARS uses the doctor symptom classification, and what they did, they just showed that this vaccine, the Gardasil, is causing massive stillbirths and abortions. So you should know that. And separately on vaccines, the swine flu vaccine linked a 900% increased risk of developing narcolepsy. Quote, the World Health Organization is currently investigating reports from 12 different countries claiming that the H1N1 swine flu vaccine is responsible for causing narcolepsy, a disorder involving extreme chronic fatigue and a tendency to fall asleep suddenly and without warning. One of the reports from Finland, for instance, found that children who received the swine flu vaccine were 900% more likely to develop narcolepsy than non-vaccinated children. So, one more reason why we should be concerned. And this is a commentary from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. These are his views, and we can agree or disagree in part or whole, but I believe that we should talk about them. Quote, the United States government has overestimated the amount of shame that it and American citizens can live with. On February 15th, quote, the indispensable people had to suffer the hypocrisy of the U.S. Secretary of State delivering a speech about America's commitment to Internet freedom while the U.S. Department of Justice brought unconstitutional acts against Twitter to reveal any connection between WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning, the American hero who, in keeping with U.S. military code, exposed U.S. government war crimes and who is being held in punishing conditions not permitted by the U.S. Constitution. The corrupt U.S. government is trying to create a conspiracy case against Julian Assange in order to punish him for revealing U.S. government documents that prove beyond every doubt the mendacity of the U.S. government. This is pretty bad, but it pales in comparison to the implications revealed on yesterday in the British journal The Guardian. Quote, The Guardian obtained an interview with Curveball, the source of Colin Powell's speech of total lies to the United Nations about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. Colin Powell's speech created the stage for the illegal American invasion of Iraq. The Guardian Curveball describes as, quote, the man who pulled off one of the greatest confidence tricks in the history of modern intelligence. Unquote. As The Guardian put it, it, quote, Curveball manufactured a tale of dread. U.S. intelligence never interviewed Curveball. The Americans started a war based upon secondhand information given to them by incompetent German intelligence, which fell for Curveball's lies that today German intelligence disbelieves. As the world now knows, Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction. The Bush-Cheney regime, of course, knew this, but Curveball's lies were useful to their undeclared agenda. In his interview with The Guardian, Curveball admitted that he made the whole story up. He wanted to do in Saddam Hussein and told whatever fantasy lies he could make up that would serve his purpose. If the Bush-Cheney regime had really believed that Saddam Hussein had world-threatening weapons of mass destruction, it would have been a criminal act to concentrate America's invading force in a small area of Kuwait, where a few weapons of mass destruction could have wiped out the entire U.S. invasion force, thus ending the war before it began. Some Americans are so thoughtless that they say that Saddam Hussein would never have used the weapons because he would have done this and that to Iraq, even nuking Baghdad. But why would Saddam Hussein care if he and his regime were already marked for death? Why would a doomed man desist from inflicting an extraordinary defeat on the American superpower, thus encouraging Arabs everywhere. Moreover, if Saddam Hussein was unwilling to use his weapons of mass destruction against an invading force, when would he ever have used them? It was completely obvious to the United States government that no such weapons existed. The weapons inspectors made that completely clear to the Bush-Cheney regime. There were no Iraq weapons of mass destruction, and everyone in the United States government was appraised of that fact. Why was there no wonder or comment in the free media that the White House accused Iraq of possessing of terrible weapons of mass destruction, but nevertheless concentrated its invasion force in such a small area that such weapons could easily have wiped out the invading force? Does democracy really exist in a land where the media is incompetent and the government is unaccountable and lies through its teeth every time it opens its mouth? Curveball represents a new level of immorality. Rafed al-Jambi shares responsibility for 1 million dead Iraqis, 4 million displaced Iraqis, a destroyed country, 4,754 dead American troops, 40,000 wounded and maimed American troops, $3 trillion of wasted U.S. resources, every dollar of which is a debt burden to the American population and a threat to the dollar as reserve currency, 10 years of propaganda and lies about terrorism and al-Qaeda connections, an American war on terror that is destroying countless lives in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, and which has targeted Iran, and which has destroyed the Bill of Rights, the U.S. Constitution, and the civil liberties that they guarantee. In the piece of lying excrement, Rafed al-Jambi is proud that he brought Saddam Hussein's downfall at such enormous expense. Now that he is revealed in the Guardian interview, how safe is he? There are millions of Iraqis capable of exterminating him for their suffering. Why does the U.S. government pursue Julian Assange and WikiLeaks for telling the truth when Curveball, whose lies wiped out huge numbers of people along with America's reputation, thinks he can start a political party in Iraq? If he does, then it's an embarrassment. So we are left to contemplate the total incompetence of American government has brought enormous instability to its puppet states in the Middle East because it desperately wanted to believe faulty intelligence. And America is a superpower and an indispensable nation. Well, my only thought on that is this. He is assuming that Curveball was not known to be incompetent. I told this audience when I found out about Curveball before anyone else did, and Judith Miller was promoting Curveball as legitimate, that he was a puppet of the Bush White House. Cheney had set up a separate intelligence gathering group aside from the CIA so that they could artificially manufacture intelligence that would justify getting us into Iraq. Curveball was a plant. Curveball was known by those of us who have knowledge. And we talked about it on the record that he was a plant. His stories have been found false by German intelligence. And therefore, he was not to be trusted. And yet the New York Times and Judith Miller, who's now a Fox contributor, helped start a war. Now he's come out of the closet, acknowledged he was a liar. Well, why don't we have a media who has the temerity to go in and see that they kept a separate group of intelligence experts, the neocons, aside from the CIA, and get the CIA people who knew that this was all set up and a lie from day one to create a war. And then suddenly you have people who would be on trial for crimes against humanity, a whole administration. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We've got our guest coming up in about 10 minutes. Before then, I have Melissa, who just came into the studio. We're going to speak with her in a moment. But first, people ask for a special on multiple vitamin. I haven't given this in over a year. So here's your special for the day. Buy one Super AM and Super PM multiple mineral vitamin and get a 50% discount. This is the vitamin mineral that covers, at a very moderate range, all the nutrients that we require from vitamin C and E and B1 and B2, pantothenic acid and folic acid and biotin and paraminobenzoic acid and niacinamide, vitamin K and iron and zinc and boron and iodine and copper and potassium and coenzyme Q10 and quercetin and pycnogenol and ginkgo and green tea and L-glutathione and linoleic acid and phosphatidylserine and lutein and citrus bioflavonoids and N-acetylcysteine and betaine, hydrochloride, and then vitamin A and D and B6 and B12 and calcium, magnesium, manganese, chromium, molybdenum, selenium, choline, inositol, rutin, hesperidin, glutamic acid, vanadium, lipase, bromelain, that's a big one, papain, and melatonin, and acetyl-L-carnitine. So this, and these are in vegetarian capsules, so this is the AM and the PM, and for the first time in a year, you buy one of each, you get one free. Call this number now, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. This is your full-spectrum vitamin and mineral combination to cover all your nutrient needs, especially if you're a vegetarian, especially if you make sure you want to get your calcium, magnesium, and your boron, your vitamin D. Covers everything. A full spectrum. It's only $30-some dollars for both. Great bargain. 877-627-5065. In studio. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Melissa is a nutritionist and a dietitian and a master's degree. And I hired Melissa, along with Pat Duncanson and a few others, to be there to help supply help counseling to people who need it, who couldn't otherwise afford it. Their time is free. You do not have to pay them a penny. They don't charge because I pay them a very nice salary. But you have a couple people online. Let's say hello to Kenneth. Hi, Kenneth.
Hey, it's my pleasure speaking with you.
Kenneth, what was your condition?
Oh, I'm a diabetic. I'm overweight. Can't breathe. I was so desperate, I called her. And I went in to meet with her. And she's a real professional. She's done an outstanding job. She's given me all my vitamins, my nutrients. And she works with me almost on a daily basis.
And how are you doing now?
And, well, I have more energy. I'm exercising more. I'm going to the pool every day. And I'm coming along very well.
So you see yourself becoming a healthy, vibrant person.
An alternative. It was so desperately needed that she was so kind, and she worked with me and worked with me. And any questions I have, I can call her. And she's been absolutely a total wonderful professional.
Thank you, Kenneth. I appreciate your input. And one other person, Helen. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Gary.
And what condition did you have or do have?
I have sinus infection with candida.
And what is the status now?
I'm doing much better. I had a very bad cough, and I had gone to the doctor, and they tested me for allergies and TB and asthma and everything. And, of course, nothing, you know, none of that was true. So I went into the store one day and met Melissa, and she set up an appointment with me, and we sat down for about an hour. She gave me a very detailed schedule for what I could eat and not eat. And she followed up with phone calls several times to make sure I was sticking to the diet and how I was doing. And I'm feeling much better now. I was coughing like for months continuously, and I have now where I'm not coughing as much, and I can speak now. It was affecting my vocal cords. I can speak. And I have to be very strict with my diet and keep an alkaline base in my diet, and avoid dairy and gluten and red meat and things like that. And she gave me some very good supplements that were in your store, and which I had never seen in any other store. And I'm really doing much better. I'm very pleased. I think Melissa was very friendly and knowledgeable, and she really cares about everybody, and she spent a lot of time with me, and was very good.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Helen, and I wish you all the best in your journey back to health.
Thank you.
Okay, Melissa. Well, thank you. I appreciate you just dropping by. I always like to know that, you know, people are getting helped.
Well, I'm happy to help people, and it's a pleasure to be here, Gary. And thank you.
Good. And if anybody would like help from Melissa, just give her a call. It's free, and she'll spend all the time necessary. My criteria, if you remember when I hired you, I said, you got to be able to love people, care for people, and treat every person as if it's your mother.
Right.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Give her a call, 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. Her name is Melissa. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Now to the segment of our program that a lot of people find a particular interest. Different people, some like the social commentaries, some like the health and nutrition and environmental update, but the interviews with remarkable minds seems to be at the top of everyone's list. And we have Matteo Pistona, P-I-S-T-O-N-A-O, from Colorado. He's an American Buddhist practitioner, a scholar, and a political activist. And for the past decade, Matteo has entered some of the more remote regions of Tibet, evading Chinese security to bring out photos of prisons, secret documents, smuggled interviews of torture victims, and acts of human rights abuse. And he has published his travels in a book just released, In the Shadow of the Buddha, Secret Journeys, Sacred Histories, and Spiritual Discovery in Tibet. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Okay, we don't hear much about ongoing human rights violations and atrocities in Tibet as we used to, especially in the 1990s when there were more demonstrations and police crackdowns on Tibetans speaking out for democracy and the integrity of their spiritual and ethnic traditions. Now that China sits at the table among the elite nations, idealized for its booming economy and having more international clout to dictate its own trade and policy agenda, and ongoing human rights violations, not just with Tibetans, but also the Uyghurs in Western China and the Falun Gong, and simply pro-democracy voices among the Han Chinese have been sidelined and don't reach major media. Now for the past decade, and during most of the 2000s, you've been witnessing and gathering material that shows Chinese oppression in Tibet is continuing and perhaps in some ways more insidious than ever before. So first, present to us the conditions of Tibetans today under Chinese rule, and has policies changed in Tibet at all compared to earlier Politburo regimes before the current Chinese administration?
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, since when there was a bit of political liberalization in the late 1980s in China, religion was allowed to be practiced a little bit more freely, not only with the Tibetan Buddhists but other religions, and so there was a bit of growth of religious practice throughout China in the late 1980s, and continues today. But in particular with the situation with Tibet, the Chinese government, the Chinese Communist Party, what they are most concerned about is stability, this sort of consolidated nation, if you will. And they see the Dalai Lama as the single greatest threat to that stability, because they believe the Dalai Lama wants Tibet to be an independent country. From the Tibetan side, the Tibetans' devotion to the Dalai Lama, their faith in Tibetan Buddhism, and their feelings of nationhood, of nationalism, are inextricably linked. So you can't really separate those. So when a Tibetan prays to the Dalai Lama, for example, the Chinese will see that as a political act, because they see the Dalai Lama as a separatist, somebody who wants to split Tibet from China, although since the late 80s He has steadfastly said that Tibet will be part of China, but just allow Tibetans to make decisions in Tibet.
What we're witnessing throughout the Arab world, such as protest, is an awakening population speaking out against dictatorial leaderships that are extremely powerful and wealthy, but also riddled with fear, and hence their need to push forward totalitarian policies and ideologies. And China perhaps fears the human spirit of its population more than any other nation of the world, in my opinion, in large part because it is so large, and second because there is a great deal of division between various Chinese ethnic groups. How do you see fear as the deeper psychology being played out by the Chinese authorities in Tibet? And if you would, address the question that is not really answered thoroughly. Why would the Chinese need to hate the Dalai Lama, even now that he has stated repeatedly, as you just mentioned, that he publicly does not seek a separate, independent Tibetan nation?
Yeah. It's true that this overriding psychological element within the Chinese Communist Party mind, if you will, is fear, and it's fear of the dissolution of the state. You know, when they saw what happened in the former Eastern Bloc, Eastern Europe countries, this is their worst nightmare, where you have various independence movements. It's why in the last few weeks, on no search engines in China can you search for the words Egypt or Tunisia or Cairo. These words are banned now on the internet within the Chinese, as we call it, the Great Chinese Firewall. So they see, this fear of their own people is, as you put it, is very correct as well. Because as we saw what happened in 1989 with Tiananmen Square, they are willing to run tanks over their own students, even if it challenges the Communist Party. So With this as a sort of background, when the Communist Party and when China views the Dalai Lama, they see the international respect that he has, and they fear that they just have this fear that he will incite the Tibetans to to rise up against the Chinese rule. In 2008, right before the Olympics, when China was trying to put on a face of stability and harmony throughout the People's Republic of China. If we remember, Tibet sort of blew up. It was in March, and there were some demonstrations in Lhasa, and those demonstrations spread throughout the entirety of the Tibetan Plateau over the course of a few months. There was over 300 demonstrations. And what those, and this is after, if we recall, China invaded Tibet in the 1950s. So we're more than with half a century of Chinese occupation of Tibet, and these Tibetans that rose up in 2008, this uprising, it had basically two messages. One, we want the Dalai Lama to come back, and two, we don't want China to tell us what to do in Tibet. These are the two messages, and by large part, the demonstrations were peaceful. There was a couple days of violence in Lhasa. But on the whole, they were peaceful. And, of course, the Dalai Lama is that this nonviolent glue that holds the Tibetan struggle together. After more than, after nearly 60 years of occupation, it's extraordinary that the Tibetan struggle has remained nonviolent. And I think it's one reason why the United States government and other Western governments do support the Dalai Lama and the Tibetan struggle, because it has remained nonviolent. And I must say, it was so inspiring to see what happened in Cairo. You know, this wasn't a Twitter revolution or a Google revolution. This was a nonviolent revolution. They overthrew a regime nonviolently. And they used the most skillful means they could, but this was still nonviolent, and it should be remembered as that, I think.
It was nonviolent because they didn't have weapons. If that same revolution came in the United States, I can assure you there would have been armed people going to the streets. I'm glad that it was nonviolent. It shows the power of nonviolence. But remember, this administration and every administration has supported the Chinese because we borrow money from them, and we buy their cheap products in the United States. Let us be very clear at all times that we have supported, of the 22 Arab League nations, only three do not have dictators. We support all those dictators against their people. We supply them with arms and ammunition. We sell them defense armaments. Saudi Arabia, we just had the biggest contract in American history with another nation. It was between $40 and $60 billion over a few years. All defense, not to help the local people. So we actually empower the military regimes or the dictatorships or the monarchies against their own people. So it was rather interesting.
Of course. And if we look, and Gary, if we look to China, you know, it was during the Clinton administration that when China, you know, maintained its most favored nation's trading status.
Yeah, and wanted to be in the world. Clinton got
moved into the world. The WTO,
world trade.
The world trade. And it was the United States who ushered that in. And it was It was with the thought that the opening up of these countries through capitalism, this is what Bill Clinton was saying, would somehow bring about a sort of information revolution with the people, and then the government would follow, and there would be sort of democratic reforms. And there couldn't have been.
You don't believe Clinton. I hope you don't believe Clinton.
But this is exactly
He's never told the truth about anything.
Of course, I don't agree with this. I'm just saying what
this is
know,
the same
what
Bill,
his argument was.
I understand, but this is the same Bill Clinton who made sure that our American farmers had their products in Jamaica and in Trinidad and in Haiti, so that it virtually destroyed the indigenous agriculture, so that Haiti, that at one time could feed itself, even though it was poor, today has to import everything. No, this is not a man that I respect on any level for his words.
Gary, what I'm saying, I'm just sort of stating what the United States government did during the Clinton administration.
Well, I understand.
And then has sort of continued to do so. You know, the first 2 years of the Obama administration, where President Obama was essentially trying to get along with China because of these two major issues, currency valuation and the environment, climate change. And they wanted to not discuss the other issues because they wanted to create a climate of discussion. But this isn't the way that the Chinese government works. They continue, you know, I've seen this throughout my years of working here. They always have they sort of extend a soft hand, and at the same time, they have a hard hand. And so when they reach out with one, they're punching with the other.
Yeah,
and
I agree. Tell us about
exactly
what you saw. Mateo, tell us what you saw that we are not aware of, that we haven't seen in the media or heard anywhere about what was going on in their prisons or in their detention camps. Tell us that part of the story.
You know, I spoke to many monks and nuns who had spent time in prison, and they had been released on some usually medical parole. The reason that they were in prison is they had gone to the streets and had just said, "We want the Dalai Lama to come back," or "Long live the Dalai Lama," and for that they were imprisoned. They were charged with separatism or sedition, trying to split Tibet from China. And inevitably, they experienced extraordinary forms of torture. You know, I saw the scars that you see on them. Sometimes can't see the scars so much because the government at this point knows that to beat someone's face in that you'll have that as evidence. And they use these sort of sandbags, these bags filled with sand to beat the prisoners. They hang them from the rafters in something called airplane position. That was what the nuns called it. And this electrocution, you know, they were electrocuted in on every part of their body. I sat down with one farmer who had it was in Lhasa in the Potala Square and had just waged his own one-man demonstration. And he had been tortured so bad when he came out that he was just shaking, and his eyes were sort of opening and closing, and he was just shaking so much that after about 10 minutes, he was just exhausted from speaking. And his, you know, his body was completely broken. He had been tortured, had been beaten, and he was completely broken, his body was. And that is what the Chinese government wants with Tibetans and Tibetan culture. They want it to be broken and subservient to the Han majority, that is the Chinese majority. But this isn't going to happen. You know, the Tibetan spirit won't be able to be beaten, and my sort of decade of traveling around Tibet and through Tibet, I saw this extraordinary resolve that they have in their Buddhist faith, in the Dalai Lama, and in their yearning to one day be free. And you know, as a Buddhist, Gary, we, you know, one of the first things we study is, and that we contemplate, we meditate on, is impermanence. How everything is impermanent, you know, even this body of ours. And that includes governments, you know, as we just saw last week, you know, with Hosni Mubarak. And so I have, you know, it gives me some pause to think that to know that this communist regime in Beijing is not going to be there forever. I'm completely impatient with it, and I get very angry.
It'll be there throughout our entire lifetimes.
It may be, but this is why I think the wisdom that we see in the Dalai Lama, the decisions that he makes sometimes aren't as popular with people because they don't see it as politically expedient in the short term.
Well,
but I believe that he has this sort of long-term vision for the benefit of Tibetans and of Chinese.
Mateo, I'm not a fan of the Dalai Lama. All right.
Uh-huh.
I am a fan of Gandhi, and Gandhi and the Dalai Lama can't even be said in the same breath. So you can have your views. I respect that. But I will not at this time divert from our discussion by telling you what I think are the limitations of the Dalai Lama and the way he practices Buddhism. That's his right, your right. But if Gandhi were around today, I can assure you there would be a whole lot different approach to China and the activism towards China. It's like, okay, beat me in this world. You won't break my spirit, you'll break my body, but I'll be reincarnated back as even, even a stronger-willed person. I believe that at some point we have to deal.
Yeah, that's not. Of course,
I deal with a different reality.
That's not at all what the Dalai Lama says.
Right. No, I didn't say he says that.
Just a second, Gary. The Dalai Lama continually reiterates that this issue isn't about him or about the institution of the Dalai Lama, for which he said that perhaps it won't even go on beyond him. He said this is about the 6 million Tibetans in Tibet. It's not even about the refugee community that's outside mm-hmm. that gets so much press. So that view that you just expressed, that is incorrect. With regards to the similarities between Gandhi and the Dalai Lama, of course, many people draw those similarities, and the Dalai Lama uses Gandhian principles, this truth insistence, the satyagraha in Sanskrit, as his guiding political philosophy. So I would definitely disagree with you that the Dalai Lama's approach, his this approach of nonviolence or ahimsa to his political activism, is anything but pure.
Well, we share a difference of opinion on that, and that's fine. That's what this show encourages, people's opinions. Mateo, I thank you very much for being on. Hopefully people will read the book, In the Shadow of Buddha, Secret Journeys. I feel you've made a major contribution to our insights, and I only wish that Hillary Clinton, when looking at the truth of everything that occurs in China, and our government, and its agencies, and our major corporations, and the major corporate elite, ask themselves, at what price is profit? At what price is greed? They're the ones who do not have to pay for that cost, whether the Falun Gong, that the Chinese regularly harvest their organs while they're still alive and sell them on the market, and all the abuses that different cultures have to go through, all of which shows the hypocrisy of us promoting democracy when we are partners with tyrants. Whether it's Saudi Arabia and the abuse against women and free speech and rights, or the Chinese. And I thought that the President of the United States should have made an absolute strong statement to the world, which he did not. I read his statement. Since he is a Nobel Prize winner, and I believe they should take it back, and yet the Nobel Prize winner from China this past year in peace was not allowed to attend, was not allowed to even receive that award, and therefore I deal with the issues of who has the courage to take the risk to stand for principles instead of always looking for some ground they can compromise on so they can continue to have a relationship that on the spiritual side is just void, but on the pragmatic and financial side is beneficial. So thank you very much, Mattia, for being on and sharing your points of view. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's take a few moments to hear from you. We have we've been so packed with guests and information, and starting in a week and a half, I'll be doing at least 10 minutes of every show with your call-ins. Call us now on any aspect, any subject you'd like to share your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And while we're waiting for your calls to come in, I'll be happy to take them. I'll share some additional insights that I didn't have a chance to get to. From our environmental segment today, two pesticides, one is paraquat, the other is rotenone, linked to Parkinson's disease. And this is from Science Daily and published in Environmental Health Perspectives. Quote, new research shows a link between the use of two pesticides and Parkinson's disease. People who used either pesticide developed Parkinson's disease approximately 250% more than non-users. The study was a collaboration effort conducted by the researchers of the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences, which is part of the National Institutes of Health, and the Parkinson's Institute and Clinical Center. Now, here's the issue. Now that we know that these are commonly used pesticides, why would we not ban them? Well, here's the issue. One area of government shows you the danger of something to human health, but other agencies of government will protect the manufacturing rights of that pesticide, those pesticides. So something can cause cancer, and we won't take it off the market. In fact, if we took something off the market, we would actually, as a government, and hence the taxpayer, have to pay for lost profits from that manufactured good. Lavender oil. A lot of people don't realize that it's great for sleeping at night, especially if you're having trouble. Just put two or three drops on your pillow. But it's also an antifungal. According to the Journal of Medical Microbiology, lavender oil can be used to combat the increasing incidence of antifungal resistant infections. And the essential oil shows a potent antifungal effect against strains of fungi responsible for common skin and nail infections. This was done at the University of Coimbra in Portugal. So add that on. And China's poor treated to fake rice made from plastic. Quote, China's history of food safety is rocky, but even in the annals of robbery and abuse, this one will go down in infamy. Various reports in Singapore media have said that Chinese companies are mass-producing fake rice cakes and rice made in part out of plastic. And, quote, the rice is made by mixing potatoes, sweet potatoes, and plastic. The potatoes are fast forming into the shape of rice grains. Industry synthetic resins are then added into the mix. The rice reportedly stays hard even after being cooked. The Korean language weekly Hong Kong reported the fake rice is being sold in the Chinese town of Taiyang. And so, more abuse to the Chinese people. Let's say hello to Alan from Brooklyn. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Gary. I thank you for taking my call. And my question to you is, I've been calling alternative doctors that I hear on your show and other places, and I'm suffering from hepatitis C. I was on ozone. It didn't do much great for the viral load, and I wanted to get vitamin C intravenously, but a lot of doctors, even the alternative doctors, want like $250, $350 for consultations. And I'm at a position where I'm on Social Security disability. And I was wondering why the alternative industry charges such consultation prices when you know that you're going there for a specific disease, number one. And number two, what is your opinion of acupuncture and Chinese herbs for the modality of treating hepatitis C?
All right. Well, you've raised several questions simultaneously. I believe that most complementary doctors are overcharging. I believe that they, realistically, to pay for their overhead and pay for their practice, I believe an initial consultation of 1 hour with a patient should be no more than $300 for that full hour, seeing the doctor. it is also going to be necessary for them to have a full knowledge, including whatever medical records you have or current medical evaluations, so they can make an intelligent current evaluation. A lot of people are charging far more than that, in which case I would ask people not to go to those people, boycott them. It also wouldn't hurt if you called physicians and simply said, I only have Social Security, can you do some compassion healing? I am sure that you'll find some that can or would. But it means being persistent. It means making a lot of calls. There are over 300 doctors in the New York City area alone that use what we call complementary medicine. I have seen some very good results, at least relieving some of the symptoms, but not dealing with the virus itself, using acupuncture and herbs. However, there are very good anti-hepatitis protocols, the best being intravenous vitamin drips. And if you can get a physician, Raphael Kelman might be a good one that comes to mind, that can use high dose of vitamin C and aqueous vitamin A, that will affect the liver in a positive way. And then follow that up with, if you look at it's no longer in print, but I have a 100-page chapter on how I help people with AIDS, and many of the AIDS persons also had hepatitis B and C. And those are all protocol specific, including bitter melon juice and curcumin, to help people with hepatitis. That way you can have the best protocol out there, the most comprehensive protocol, and then implement those part of the protocols that are reasonable. Like buying bitter melon is not expensive. It's very inexpensive. You can get it in Chinatown. So you can implement this even on a limited budget, and that will make a difference. And I'm sure that if you are persistent, you will find a compassionate physician. All the best to you, Alan. And we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for caring enough to listen in and hopefully sharing the insights and information to others. Have a nice day.
The Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.